Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another exciting episode of Anthology of Horror. I'm your host and narrator, Springheel Jack. Thank you to all new listeners for tuning in, and thank you to all repeat listeners for continuing to tune back in. New listeners, at this time, if you've never listened to this show, please allow me to tell you that I, at times, can be considered offensive. I can be considered irreverent. I make rude jokes. I have still not heard the end of a statement that I made during the Black Dahlia episode because it was so offensive, allegedly. So, if anything, let's say, that isn't Disney Channel safe, offends you, please turn this podcast off now. And to all new listeners that stuck around and repeat listeners, thank you very much for tuning back in. I appreciate each and every one of you. Without you guys, this show, it would, maybe it'd still be possible, but I fucking wouldn't be doing it. That's for goddamn sure. I appreciate you guys reaching out with support. I appreciate you guys reaching out to tell me I'm doing a decent job. And I appreciate you guys rating me on the iTunes store. I genuinely do this for you, and you're the reason I keep going. On that note, I strive to offer you an ad-free, guaranteed experience. I have not monetized this podcast for that reason. You guys have never dicked me on time. I know that time is valuable and extremely hard to come by, and I know a lot of you guys listen at work, and there's nothing more annoying than working and listening to fucking advertisements on a podcast from some illiterate nobody. And I will not do that to you. So when I do play advertisements on this show, just know that they are fake. They are owned creatively by Rockstar Games, and I had nothing to do with the making of, the selling of, or the promotion of them. I just find them fucking hilarious, and I was hoping that you would too. And I use them to break up the sound of my own voice or to cheer myself up after I read a story that reads like it was written by an illiterate nobody. So on that note, I at random have hand-selected several of the stories for today. As always, I've never read them. I will be reading them for you with the first time. I've read the title, the first line, and that is it. If the first line makes cohesive sense, they pass my spelling and grammar background check, and that's all I read. So my reaction to these stories is genuine. I try to pick ones that I think will scare me so I can give you more of an authentic listener experience, but I don't necessarily scare easy, and I'm usually far more upset by bad grammar and, you know, poor writing ability. But either way, without any further ado, after this message from a fake sponsor, I'm going to jump right into it, and this is going to be another story compendium episode.
I wish I could stop time so my wife looked like she did 20 years ago. Now she's a disgusting pig. Man, I hate middle age.
Now you can stop time with Preservex. At funerals, they always say how wonderful the deceased look. The secret is formaldehyde. It preserves the skin. Preservex brings the wisdom of the funeral parlor to the beauty parlor. Most beauty products only work skin deep. Preservex works under the skin to replenish aging cells and freeze time once and for all. Preservex, stay beautiful for all of eternity.
Now that's a fucking racket right there. Fucking funerals. Jesus Christ. They have a $500 cardboard casket for the economical funeral. Fuck you. All right, so this one's called You Know That Old Urban Legend? Written by Anonymous. As always with these stories, written by Anonymous. If you grew up in the country as I did, you've heard it. The one about some bridge or some location, usually in a valley and almost always near water, where something supposedly horrible happened to a mother and her child. And at night, if you're quiet, you can hear a baby crying or a mother calling for her child. Yeah, that's the one. It's a great excuse to take your girlfriend out to a dark, secluded location, get her all scared, and kick her out of the car and make her walk home. Or, when she feels all safe and secure, have her jump into your lap and take her underwear off. Right? Scary places always landed me the choice ass back in the day. Know what I mean, bro? No, I don't know what you mean, bro. We had Tinder when I was in high school. Yeah, well, I know what happened. And I know the place where it occurred. You see, there's this old bridge down in a valley that crosses a small river. It's not far from here. If you want, I can take you out there. Yes, we can go tonight. The legend usually says a mother was rushing her sick baby to the hospital and ran her car off a bridge. The story also goes that the mother got out of the car, but drowned after repeatedly trying to find her baby in the dark water. The next morning, the police found the car and the two bodies after a farmer called the wreck in. Years later, teenagers used to hang out there in the fields on the north side of the bridge, and they told stories of hearing a woman screaming,
"Oh my God, where's my baby? Someone help me! Oh God, my baby!"
There are variations, but this is usually the gist of the tale. And the truth is, the valley was haunted a long time before anything like that ever happened. And it was not haunted by some woman screaming for her baby. Not then, at least. You see, out here in the country, there's things that never see the light of day. Things not meant for mortal eyes. They wander the countryside looking for food. They feed on humans, you see. They wear the skin of their kills. Look just like us. And, ooh, that took a turn quick. Once it's on them, you can't tell them apart from us. What they look like under the skin, nobody alive now knows. Oh, that snuck up on me. The woman in this story, she was rushing her baby to the hospital, but she did have a car wreck. But she didn't run the shit off the bridge. She came close, though, and she seemed to be in luck as a truck came down along the highway just minutes after she ran into the road and smacked a tree. Since she was intelligent, her lights were still on, and the driver on the truck spotted her waving in the middle of the road. And what happens next? Well, it's pretty fucking horrible. See, the driver of the truck, he was one of those tings. He was wearing the previous owner's skin. He pulls over, offers to help. The mother is on the verge of passing out, so he helps her get the baby out of the car. He found it impossible to resist the tender, sweet flesh of one so young. The smell of innocence was too much, and its appetite took over. He ate the baby right there in front of its mother. Jaws split like some sort of horrible giant snake, bit it right in half, swallowed it in two bites, and right in front of the poor woman. That's where the screams came from, you see, right before he ate her too. Of course, she didn't die so quickly, being a much bigger meal than the little baby. The real horror of these things is that once they eat you, your soul or whatever, it doesn't move on like it does after a normal death. It lingers. How do I know all this? Well, I grew up around here. My grandfather told me about it once. He was one of the cops that found the car. He ran across one of those things in town one time, said it looked just like a person, just didn't seem to move right. His grandmother was an old Indian wise woman, and she told him stories of the skinwalkers when he was a child and said he'd known when he met one. So want to see that place? It's just a few miles from here. You hop in my truck, I'll take you out there. See this truck? It's beautiful. It belonged to my grandfather. It's a 55 Chevy. I restored it myself. Finish your drink. We can go check out that bridge and see if that story's true. Yeah. Ick. That's what I say. Ick. Sneak a fucking skinwalker story on me, you cunt. Okay, and a message from someone that doesn't sponsor me to break up that monotony.
Meth brought you Forbidden Fruits of Incest. Bath salts brought you the taboo joys of cannibalism. It's time to step things up a level. The hot new legal high that takes you to places you never imagined and leaves you forever changed. Toilet cleaner. It's time to smoke a real bowl. Available at your local head shop, or in case of overzealous local laws, buy it online.
Man, I'm sure that most of my listeners don't remember the days of bath salts, but God damn. Did you guys ever remember that stuff? I'm certain that the average one of my listeners is far too young, but they used to sell, or so I'm told, they sold these bath salts at head shops as plant food. And according to the laws at the time, if I'm not mistaken, it was legal to be in possession of it. It was legal to own it, to have it on you. The only thing that was illegal about it was for police to see you do it. So it was legal to do as long as nobody saw you doing it. Odd. Odd loopholes in the fucking legal system out here. But do you guys remember that? I remember watching that bath salts cannibalism video online where that dude was by the bridge and he was eating that guy's face. And I just finished watching what I was up to date on The Walking Dead. I was so fucking excited. I really thought that I was not going to have to go to work the next day, but alas. If anyone has any interesting bath salt stories on that note, I'd love to hear them. Please email me at springheeljack@anthologyofhorror.com. All right. And for our next story. Now, this one right here. that last one was almost good. All right, this one's called The Statues by Sammy Ruiz on creepypasta.com. I never liked going to my Aunt Paula's house. Honestly, I never liked her much either. She's a creepy, Bible-thumping Jesus fanatic, and she'd always circle over me like a vulture. Well said. But none of that creeped me out like her fucking house did. It was old, run down, and filled with weird religious shit. Sure, there were typical paintings of the Last Supper and Our Lady of Guadalupe, but that's not what made my skin crawl. It was the statues. I couldn't put my finger on exactly what bothered me, but something wasn't right about them. And they were scattered all over the place, filling every corner, turning up in every direction you looked, and I swear they looked back at me. Giant, god-awful figures of saints and angels clogging the tiny house and turning it into a claustrophobic fucking maze. I often wondered where my aunt had gotten the money for all those fucking statues. In all other regards, it seemed as though she'd taken a holy vow of poverty. Very little money was spent on herself or even her son. My cousin Miguel was just as strange as his mother. They were so alike that I sometimes forgot Aunt Paula had adopted him. It was the eyes that truly made them resemble one another, a haunted stare accompanied by uncomfortable silence. The first time I babysat Miguel, he never fussed or cried the way normal babies do. It should have been a relief, but the entire time I squirmed as he watched me. My mother insisted there was no medical reason to blame for his disposition, and secretly I wondered if it came from being cooped up with my weird-ass aunt too long, who never dated or married. Could have. After that evening, I passed all the babysitting opportunity on to my younger sister, and she didn't seem to mind. Probably would have continued on that way, if not for a school project that my sister... had my sister occupied at a neighbor's house right when my aunt insisted on going to Sunday Mass. There was nothing I could do to get out of it. My mom didn't care about my whining. She just leaned across the kitchen table and said, "Look, Marcos, I'm not asking, I'm telling you, and that's the fucking end of it." I like a mom with a backbone, well said. An hour later, we were in the car driving to my aunt's house, and gradually, clean swept sidewalks and picket fence gave way to chain-linking graffiti, and occasionally we'd pass a coffee house packed with hipsters milling around like poverty tourists on safari. Goddamn, Marcos. Well said. People like my aunt were the wildlife. Oh. Just as the sun began to set, we arrived at the house, and my mom parked. I stepped out of the car and walked up four wooden stairs to my aunt's front door, and as I reached out to ring the bell, the front door flung open. "Hola, Marcos," she said in a thick Mexican accent. Her dark eyes stared into mine. She was a small lady with shoulder-length black hair. She wore a white polo shirt, navy blue skirt that resembled a schoolgirl's uniform. Her wrinkled brown skin reminded me of a dried-up river. "Miguel is already asleep in his crib. Make sure you give him a bottle if he starts crying. I made two of them already. They're in the refrigerator. And make sure you do not put the TV on too loud. Your mom and I will be back in an hour." She pronounced the H in the word hour when she said it.
"Okay, Tia Paula," I responded.
She preferred when I called her Tia Paula because the word aunt was far too American for her. She was old-school Mexican lady and didn't believe in speaking English. She had no choice when it came to me because I didn't speak Spanish, and that made her angry, and it made me laugh every time I reminded her of that. She stomped off towards the car as I waved goodbye to my mother. I let out a sigh of disappointment as they drove off. "Here we go," I thought aloud as I closed the door and walked into the pitch-black house. I felt the wall for a light switch, and I flicked it on, and directly in front of me stood a 5-foot-tall statue of the Blessed Virgin Mary. I jumped back and shrieked. Maybe it was my imagination, but I thought I saw hatred in those eyes. It's weird in the otherwise serene face of the statue. It was ridiculous. Statues can't feel hatred or anything at all. It's just plaster, I said under my breath, and I warily walked towards the sofa. As I rummaged around the floral pillows for the remote, I recalled that my aunt was too cheap to pay for cable, and maybe the bill would have eaten into her precious statue money if she had. Still, that left 5 channels to choose from. 3 of those channels were network news, followed by Fox and some kind of Telemundo TV. Pickings were slim, but luckily, Fox was showing episodes of The X-Files, and I had enough time to grab a snack while the commercials were on. So wandering towards the kitchen, I noticed crucifixes nailed above each doorway. "Nope, nothing weird here," I muttered sarcastically. And inside the fridge, I found stacks of Tupperware, 2 bottles for little Miguel, and a cookie tin hiding in the back. There was a 50% chance the tin held sewing supplies, especially since it was sitting up on top of a Bible. Clearly, Aunt Paula was losing her fucking mind. A spoon sat next to the Bible, so I used it to pry open the tin. There were beans. Stank-ass, smelly beans. My consolation prize was a bottle of water, which I grabbed just as I heard the show start in the living room. And hurrying back, I plopped down on the couch. My phone buzzed with a new text message. Apparently, my friends were off hanging out at the mall like normal teenagers, and the girls they were meeting had a friend who thought I was cute. Great. I was cursed. Instead of replying, I tossed my phone towards the other end of the couch so I could focus on the adventures of Mulder and Scully. The monsters they were investigating was a shape-shifting something or the other that was behind a string of murders and several local legends. Of course, Mulder had to ask what if the legend was true, and Scully rolled her eyes and scribbled on a clipboard. And halfway through the episode, Scully was conducting an interview with a witness who just happened to be the monster in disguise. Tension was building, and just as it reached its peak, Miguel let out a blood-curdling scream down the hallway. I jumped up and ran down the hall to Miguel's room. His bedroom door was slightly ajar, and I pushed it open to find total darkness. With my body halfway in the room, I blindly fumbled for a light switch. I flicked it on and found Miguel standing in his crib, tears rolling down his cheeks, and onto his light blue onesie, his tears fell. His pudgy hands clasped the rails of the crib as he rocked his body back and forth. "What's wrong, Miguelito?" I asked, as if expecting a two-year-old to respond. Quickly, I remembered the bottles in the fridge and ran to grab one. I hustled back to his room and handed him the bottle, but he wouldn't take it, and he continued screaming. I then pressed the nipple of the bottle to his lips, but he refused to drink. Desperate, I looked around the room as if I would find the solution to the crying laying around somewhere, and I jumped back in fright. I don't know how I missed it when I walked in the room, but in front of Miguel's closet stood a life-size concrete gargoyle. It hunched over as if ready to pounce on its prey. Sharp feathered wings sprouted from its back, and its menacing face was dominated by a nose that protruded like a parrot's beak over thick-formed lips into a feral grin. Ugh. The bald, misshapen head was dwarfed by its muscular body, from which oversized hands and arms hung below its bent knees. Although the feet it perched on resembled the chicken's talons, the overall effect was ape-like. I'd never seen anything like it. It had an indefinable quality that matched the rest of the sculptures in that house, and maybe that was why I didn't run away screaming. While watching the hideous gargoyle, I rubbed my cousin's back to soothe him.
Shh. Don't cry, Miguelito.
He coughed and made himself gag from crying so hard. Through his sobbing and crying, I heard my phone ring from the living room. I dropped the bottle in Miguel's crib, picked him up, and walked to the living room. Without looking at who was calling, I answered the phone with a free hand. Jello, I shouted over Miguel's cries. Marcos, it's Tia Paola. Why is Miguel crying? I have no idea. I gave him his bottle. He wouldn't drink it, and he doesn't stop crying. Mass ended early, so we're on our way home. I told you not to put the TV on so loud, Marcos, she shouted. Tia, maybe he's crying because of that ugly statue you put in his room. That thing scared me. Why would you have something like that in the baby's room?
What black statue are you talking about, Marcos? I never put anything like that in his room, she answered.
Then where did it come from? It was in front of the closet, facing the crib, I shouted. She stayed silent for a moment, then whispered as if someone on the end of the line might overhear her.
Listen to me carefully, Marcos. Get out of the house right now and take Miguel and leave immediately.
What? I asked. Her whisper turned to screams.
Marcos, leave now. The statue you saw isn't the statue. Está un dominio.
I slowly lowered my phone and attempted to translate her last gibberish.
Es un demonio,
I whispered to myself. Prickles and goosebumps shot up my body. Once I realized what she'd said.
Oh, shit. She said it's a demon.
I dropped my phone and stumbled. The back of my knees hit the couch. I could hear my mom and aunt screaming my name from the phone speaker, and as I stepped forward to move towards the door, Miguel's bedroom light turned off. Miguel stopped crying and squeezed my neck with his little arms. With his face pressed against mine, we focused our eyes on the black hallway, and his bedroom door gently cracked open. I could feel Miguel's heartbeat galloping along with mine. From the darkness of the bedroom hallway, a low-pitched growl echoed into the living room. Miguel began to scream. As I ran to the front door, all the lights in the house suddenly shut off. Heavy footsteps thudded towards us. Something yanked both of my legs out from under me, and I fell on my side. My head hit something hard, but through the dizziness and nausea, I held onto Miguel's torso with my good arm and struggled to my feet. We made maybe two or three steps towards the door when Miguel then was ripped out of my grasp. The last thing I remember was somebody screaming. Might have been me, but I'm not sure. When I came to my senses, I was on a stretcher being loaded into an ambulance. A paramedic said I had a broken arm and a serious head contusion. I don't recall rambling about monsters or trying to get up, but when I woke up in the hospital, I was told I had to be restrained to keep from hurting myself. Doctors and detectives quizzed me on what I could remember. I insisted a monster disguised as a statue had attacked my cousin and I. They chalked it up to the blow to my head and told me that my cousin had been taken in the same home invasion that resulted in my injuries. Someone with a clipboard gently explained to me that I had been watching a TV show about monsters and urban legends before I was attacked, and the emotional and neurological trauma caused me to blend fantasy with memories of the crime. But what about the statues? I asked. Clearly, I was still confused. My aunt never had any statues, not of gargoyles or anything else. A nurse came in to put a shot of something into my IV. The last thoughts that drifted through my head were that maybe some urban legends are true. Maybe a demon can look like a statue, and maybe the house was indeed crawling with them. Wow. Goddamn, Sammy Ruiz. That's probably the best creepypasta I've ever read. Well done. That was The Statues by Sammy Ruiz on creepypasta.com, and I am going to bookmark your name, friend. That was well done. Wow. All right. And after that, winner, in all seriousness, that winner, a message from our sponsors. Our fake sponsors, that is.
Anal cleansing dates back to the Egyptians. Coffee enemas have been all the rage for a few years now. But at Rectify Holistic, we say, why stop at coffee? We have detoxifying all-natural enemas for every occasion. Get that minty fresh taste with a peppermint enema. Or be hydrated from behind with a coconut water enema. Acquire all the charm, hygiene, and je ne sais quoi of a Frenchman with a garlic enema. We've also got relaxing and inspiring flavors like Irish coffee, fruit juice, hamburger meat, or spicy ground turkey. Become nature's softy serve machine with an ice cream enema, or get ravaged by a burly Russian with the St. Petersburg surprise. Rectify Holistic. Come and get properly clean today.
Oh, God. Ugh. Okay. On that note, we got another one called The Spindler, written by Ryan Brenneman. The Spindler by Ryan Brenneman. I want to hear about the Spindler. Logan listened as the voices of his three friends spoke. He watched as the fire before him dwindled. You sure you want to do that, Lexi, in these woods? Logan's back was firmly set back against a broad old oak tree. He sat on the ground between its roots. His fingers dug unconsciously into the dirt as the flames flickered around. Yes, Adam, I do. It's why we came here. Night was upon them now in the forest. It caught between the branches like silk, threatening to fall in around Logan the moment the dim light faded. The fire wouldn't hold it back for long. Okay, guess you're right about that. Somewhere above the treetops, surely sat the stars, shining bright as ever, but not through this canopy, not through the physical night. Logan could feel it pressing down on him like the weight of the ocean. Let's do it. You want to start off, Adam? She stood on the other side of the fire, pacing back and forth, looking to Logan's right. No, Lexi, that's a Dom thing, man. Ask Dominic. Adam sat there, lazily sprawled sideways across the arms of the old lawn chair, and he pointed a beer bottle across the flames to Logan's left. Voice there responded, I'm not feeling it tonight, sorry, guys. Logan flinched as the fire reared unexpectedly. A long stick held by Dom prodded the fire's heart, and the flames hissed and lashed against it like angry vipers. Dom's voice came again. Fire's not long for this world anyway, so no, Adam. Sorry, Lexi. The stick retracted from the fire, having failed to bring it any new life. Logan glanced towards where Dom sat, rested on an old stump, stick in his hand. Fire reflecting off his glasses, he just shook his head. Come on, Dom, please do it for me. Logan felt nauseous as Lexi's voice pleaded. Adams followed. Yeah, man, do it. Might as well, right? And who cares about the fire? Makes it better without it anyways. It's scarier in the dark. Logan felt Lexi's eyes on him from across the fire. He turned his gaze down, away from the fire and into his lap. He shuddered when he heard her voice ask, Are you okay, Pippi? He closed his eyes. There was laughter to his right. Is he okay? I think it's pretty obvious that he's not. Look at him. Logan wrapped his arms around his chest as the weight of the night became a cold sting on his skin. The hair on his arm stood erect, and his chest shuddered as Lexi's voice yelled, Adam, stop it. She was moving to his left, around the fire, towards him. Adam has a point, Lexi. This might not be the best for... She sat down right next to him, and he gasped. Her hand was on his shoulder, massaging him. The other one slipped through his matted hair. This is exactly what he needs. He was the one... They wanted to come up here in the first place, to face his fears.
Right, baby?
Logan didn't move. Yes. But what's the point if he doesn't play along? Look at him, Lexi. He won't even listen to the story. He's got to play along. Sorry, Dominic. Logan won't play. The hands crept down his body. One down his neck and one down his arm, and the other on the arm, wrapped around his bicep and squeezed, and then a whisper.
You'll be fine. Just play along, BP.
The trees rustled, but Logan felt no breeze. He kept his eyes closed tightly, and Lexi's voice grew louder. He's going to be fine, Dominic. Tell the fucking story. Logan heard the stick enter the fire once more. It brushed against the ashes. Charred logs fell. Embers hissed and floated away, drowned by the night.
Logan, can you look at me?
They waited, but Logan knew they wouldn't wait long. The hand gripped around his arm gave a tender but aggressive squeeze, and the kind that meant, without saying a word, please, familiar kind of squeeze, one that had lost all of its magic.
BP, look at Dom, please.
Her words were a special kind, light to hear, but heavy with an implication. The implication that she wouldn't ask again. Logan opened his eyes. What do you want to know about the Spindler? Logan could see Lexi's hair, the outline of her face that glowed like amber in the dying light of the fire. Her eyes were hidden by shadow, and Dom pushed his glasses back up his nose with his free hand, gripping his long fire prod that sat rested on his lap with the other. He shifted a little, around on his stump, waiting for an answer. Well, there was only one answer to give, but Logan didn't want to give it. Don't. Logan shook his head. Please don't. Her hand caressed his hair. Air whistled across the mouth of the beer bottle, laughing again from Logan's right. Told you, didn't I? Told you, he won't play. Taunting, abrasive, just like Adam. The hand fell to his neck, and Logan felt the nails scratching his skin, gently. I know its name, Logan stated quickly. That's it, I swear. I only know its name. He remembered she wouldn't ask again, and the nail stopped scratching and the hand relaxed. Logan continued. You don't talk about it, you just don't. Kids do, and that's what, when they were young. When they're bad, it's like sex. You talk about it when mom's back is turned. You talk about it in the dark. You giggle with your friends. You lie. I know nothing about the Spindler, I swear. Leave me alone. Her arm wrapped around his waist. He shuddered as her head touched his shoulder.
Good job, BB.
There was a glimmer from the bottle and a chuckle. Logan couldn't help but look. Adam was hunched over the seat, now staring at the ground. Between his legs, he toyed with the beer bottle, spinning the base around in circles. He raised it to his lips. That's a lie, Logan. You know more than that, man. You gots to. You know more than a name. Dom knew more than that. Lexi knew more than that. You know it lives here in these woods, where Mommy and Daddy told you not to go. He lifted the bottom of the bottle to the shadows above. He sighed in refreshing satisfaction. He's not totally lying, Adam. I don't think anyone knows anything about the Spindler. Not really. Hell, I'd be surprised if either one of you or Lexi knew anything more than this. No one goes into these woods, not since long ago, but I guess we're proof that even that isn't true. Lots of people go in here, lots of people, and most never come out. Lexi's head shifted. How long ago was it? Logan squirmed, and Lexi's hand was cold on his back. She held him tight. He had no energy to fight back, and in Dom's lenses, the flames were almost mesmerizing, but still fading. Flames barely crackled as the answer was given. Ancient. The Spindler's ancient, and so is this forest. Nobody can imagine how long, and nobody would want to. When the natives came, they found it. And they left it alone. Can you imagine? With how many stories you've heard of skinwalkers, wendigos, and evil spirits that they could have imagined? I don't think so. Would you ever believe there was one so bad they pretended it never existed? The question was punctuated by a crack outside of the dome of safe light, somewhere in the woods. Nothing followed it. Nothing emerged. Nothing else moved. Not even bugs chirped in this dark silence. Ooh. Logan turned, but only he moved. And the only part of Lexi that moved was her mouth. Is that why we avoid it? Because they did? There was no response. No, Lexi. I would guess it's got something to do with instinct. I mean, I know Logan feels it, the weight of this place. Other forests have a pulse. They're alive in motion. This one, it's dead. Like the world doesn't move here. Almost 1,000 acres dead. And I think it's particularly unnerves people when something is dead and yet it looks back at you. The flames came less and less. A deep orange burned at the heart of the embers, but nothing more. Logan could almost feel the cold night lapping against his back like cold black waves. Soon, not even the tree would make him feel safe. That's nice and flowery and all, Dom, but what is it, the Spindler? What is it, man? Over Adam's voice, he heard something move. Was it another crack, or was he imagining things? Logan couldn't bring himself to look, though. It had come from the other side of Lexi, higher than the ground, surely, and her head didn't move. It all depends on what you've been told, I suppose. Some say it's a spirit. Rather mundane explanation if you ask me. Others say it's an evil incarnate, but I think that's a bit too presumptuous. A little melodramatic. I think it's just... Lexi's jaw moved. What do you mean? Dom fixed his glasses once more with his free hand and his face angled up towards the canopy. Fuck. If I know. Fuck if I know, but it's senseless that makes the most sense when it comes to the Spindler. You have to think a bit outside the bun. His face snapped down towards Logan as a question was asked. What do you think the Spindler looks like, Logan? Logan didn't want to answer, even though he could. The image in his head lived horribly there, and even worse, it fit just beautifully in the darkness above. He pictured it sitting there, smiling, watching. He pictured instead a spider. Giant spider. There was a sigh. Logan held his head down, away from the canopy. That is what most people assume. I've heard the same many times. A spider with 1,000 eyes and a beaming, human smile. One that crawls across the canopy, living between the tops of the trees. Maybe one with legs as thick, round as tree trunks, but I've also heard that it looks like a man. Monstrous with fangs and claws for fingers. And then I've heard more. Some more man-like others. More beastly. And yet some follow none of these. The most intriguing of the tales will tell you what the Spindler is, an abstraction. There was surely another crack, maybe two, in the woods beyond the fire. Past an impenetrable wall of night, something lingered, lurked. Logan was the only one who gave a shit, and there was a chuckle from Adam's side of the fire. What the hell is that supposed to mean? You know what he's talking about, Lexi. Logan felt her shoulders rise in a shrug. It means, Adam, that the Spindler just is, but isn't. It has a form when it wants, and when it doesn't, it isn't. It doesn't simply live in the canopy. It is the canopy, the darkness that blocks out the sun, the stars. The darkness that follows you and descends upon you with claws and teeth. Logan's breaths came in rasp. Lexi's hands had stopped massaging him, and Logan didn't even realize, nor did he notice, that only a lone flame still flickered in the fire pit. He didn't even realize that the snapping in the distance, the footsteps of somebody or something, had become regular. He could only focus on the layer of the night that loomed above, thick enough to block out the heavens. Sounds came from there as well. Do you know why people think it looks like a spider? Lexi's arm raised, ready to answer Dom's question. I know. It's because of the webs, isn't it? The black webs? Perhaps the sounds were natural, but Logan didn't believe that at all. The surrounding sounds surrounded them. But the sounds surrounded them. Logan's eyes darted around, and they caught something different. Adam was standing, holding the bottle up to his lips. Yes, the black webs. The Spindler always leaves them around the forest, hanging them in single strands wherever he chooses. Adam didn't say a word. Nope, not anymore. He just lowered his bottle, and his face hung towards the fire. Only the voices of Lexi and Dominic continued. And you get stuck in them, right? People get stuck in them? The sounds were getting closer. Footsteps is what it had to be, but also in the trees? Like helpless flies, Lexi, people go into these woods, and the Spindler sees that they never come out. See, the webs are not made of the same darkness that the Spindler is itself, and they're so thin you can only ever see them if you're looking at them. Yet once they have you, they won't let you go. You can scream. It lets you scream, in fact, but the Spindler, it watches it all. Footsteps, too many to count, in every direction. And then, when it has you, it keeps you. You belong to the Spindler, Lexi. You belong to the woods. Tears welled in Logan's eyes. What does it do with the people it keeps? Tell us about it. The scarecrows. Logan's heart dropped, too hard to breathe, he gasped. The scarecrows are what the Spindler does for fun. You listen to those, the Spindler lets leave the forest because that's the only way you get it. The only way you get out, it has to let you. Listen to the lucky few and they'll tell you about the scarecrows. The scarecrows are the ones it mutilates, twists, and contorts. They're the ones it hangs. By the same black thread they were ensnared on to make it easy for the Spindler to do whatever it pleases to them. And it likes to do a whole lot to them. It likes to drop them right in front of people. Far away in the distance, it doesn't matter because it'll make more. Just a bit by tugging on the strings. Maybe it'll make them dance, run at you. Some say it copies voices well enough that it makes it sound all too human when corpses scream at you in vain. They shout warnings. It tells you to run. Run right into its traps using victims' voices. Logan tried to stand up. He tried to run, but Lexi held him down and her face didn't look away from Dominic.
Hold on, BB, we're almost at the end.
What else does the Spindler do, Dominic? It's not just scarecrows, is it? Logan struggled, but her grasp was firm. Like I said, it only makes scarecrows out of the boring ones, the loners, the losers. The rest keeps them a bit longer. What it does with them in the long run, who knows? They don't leave here, though. Their bodies are never found. And maybe because they become part of the forest, maybe they're fuel that keeps it going. Until then, it makes use of you. It plays with you. It toys with you for as long as it can. The advancing footsteps reach the crescendo. Logan knew they were surrounded, no way out. The flame had died, the noises had stopped, almost like they were waiting. It makes you a puppet.
Don't look at me, little puppet.
Dom stoked the fire, and for just a moment, Logan saw them surrounding the fire pit on every side. Faceless, naked bodies, and the footsteps had stopped, leaving only Dom's voice clinging to the chilling air. And it's really good at it. Really good at the voices. Adam laughed, bringing the bottle that had been empty for the last hour up to its lips. Good at the motions. Dom, his hand wrapped closely, irreversibly around a wrong stick, drew it from the fire pit and set it on his lap. His voice finished from somewhere up above. And it's very, very good at making it all seem real. As the light faded for the last time, Logan felt Lexi's hand on his chin. It made him look. He saw them again. And he had, as he had hours before. And from Lexi's pale eyes, from the center of her pupils, emerged two thin strands of black webbing that reached upwards into the night to the Spindler. Her mouth moved before the darkness crashed around him, and a voice echoed from somewhere above. What do you think, Logan? Do you believe? That was The Spindler by Ryan Brenneman. And I will be back with more spooky stories after this message from a fake company.
Your boss is a thief, a bully, and a crook. He expects you to work. That's like slavery. And thanks to popular plebiscite, it's now entirely illegal in our state. Hammerstein and Faust Employment Law. We are specialists in San Andreas employment litigation. With our help, you'll never need to work again. With a well-managed lawsuit, your economic miracle can go on forever. Call us today. Live on the beach tomorrow. Remember, accidents do happen. Why not slip and fall into the good life? This is the real American dream. Pull yourself up by your bootstraps after faking a fall at work and suing everybody into poverty. We'll show you the alternatives when it comes to getting what you deserve from your work environment. Call today or visit our website, HammersteinFaust.com.
If only that wasn't true. All right, I pieced together another little special section for you for the last half of this show. And these are spooky, but they're spooky because they are confirmed as actually having happened. And these are not ghost stories. These are strange, unexplained coincidences. Which, you know, if you ever get that deja vu feeling or whatever, it's weird, right? So let's get this started with coincidental deaths. Similar to deja vu, this is a similar story of coincidence. This story is about two brothers. In 1975, while riding a moped in Bermuda, a man was accidentally struck and killed by a taxi. One year later, the man's brother was killed in the very same way. In fact, he was riding the very same moped. And to stretch the odds even further, he was struck by the same fucking taxi driver and even carrying the same passenger. Odd. Here's another one. Joseph Mathis Agner was a fairly well-known portrait painter in the 19th century Austria, who apparently was quite an unhappy fellow. He several times attempted suicide. His first attempt was at the very young age of 18, when he tried to hang himself, but was interrupted by the mysterious appearance of a Capuchin monk. That's the, Capuchins are the St. Francis monks, I believe, Capuchin order. At age 22, he again tried to hang himself, but he again was saved by the same monk. 8 years later, his death was ordained by others who sentenced him to the gallows for his political activities. Once again, his life was saved by the intervention of the same monk. At age 68, he finally succeeded in suicide. This time, he used a pistol. His funeral ceremony was conducted by the same monk, a man whose name Agner never knew. And that is from Ripley's giant book, believe it or not. All right, this next story is called Winnings, Rightful Owner. In 1858, Robert Fallon was shot dead during an act of vengeance by those with whom he was playing poker. Fallon, they claimed, had won $600 in the entire pot of $600 through cheating. With Fallon's seat empty and none of the other players willing to take the now unlucky $600, they found a new player to take Fallon's place and staked him with the dead man's $600. By the time the police had arrived to investigate the murder, the new player had turned the $600 into $2,200 in winnings. The police demanded the original $600 to pass on to Fallon's next of kin, only to discover the new player turned out to be Fallon's son, who had not seen his father in 7 years. What the fuck? Also in Ripley's giant book, believe it or not. This one's called Strangers on a Train. In the 1920s, three English men were traveling separately by train through Peru, and at the time of their introduction, they were the only three men in the railway car. The introductions were more surprising than they could have imagined. One man's last name was Bingham, and the second man's last name was Powell. The third man announced that his last name was Bingham Powell, but none of them were related in any way. Okay, this next one's from Detroit. In Detroit, sometime in the 1930s, a young, if incredibly careless mother must have been eternally grateful to a man named Joseph Figlock. As Figlock was walking down the street, the mother's baby fell from a high window onto Figlock. Thus, the baby's fall was broken, and both the man and the baby somehow were unharmed. A stroke of luck on its own, but a year later, the very same baby fell from the very same window onto the poor, unsuspecting Joseph Figlock again as he was passing beneath. And again, they both survived the event. Fuck, man, where was he when Eric Clapton's son was up there? All right, in 1953, a television reporter, Irv Kupcinet, was in London to cover the coronation of Queen Elizabeth II. In one of the drawers in his room at the Savoy, he found some items that by their identification belonged to a man named Harry Hanin. Coincidentally, Harry Hanin, a basketball star with the famed Harlem Globetrotters, was a good friend of Kupcinet's. But the story has yet another weird twist just 2 days later. And before he could tell Hanin of his lucky discovery, Kupcinet received a letter from Hanin. And in the letter, Hanin told Kupcinet that while staying at the Hotel Meurice in Paris, he found in a drawer a tie with Kupcinet's name on it. So they shared hotel reviews and fucking found each other's stuff in the room. I don't know about that one. But I'll be back with these after a brief fake ad from a fake sponsor.
Hello, my name is Yogi Ampedipaka. Yoga is a way of slowly making your mind and body one. But we haven't got time for that. We've got to keep it interesting. We finally made yoga American with bloodlust, failure, and swinging. It's Darwinian yoga. Each class takes you to the edge, and only the strong survive. You not only improve yourself, but feel doubly better because someone else is failing. Darwinian yoga. Reveal the inner truths.
Call me crazy, man, but I'd think about doing that. It's like, I usually get people pretty fucking pissed off when I start talking about the way that I figured out how to fix the economy in America. If you want to know, you can email me, but chances are I won't give you a straight answer. Just know that I have figured it out, the path to economic success in America. And also, at the same time, it would correct the prison system. And I will not be sharing it on this show. This is not a politics show. This next one's called Paging Mr. Bryson. While on a business trip sometime in the late 1950s, Mr. George D. Bryson stopped and registered at the Brown Hotel in Louisville, Kentucky. After signing the register and being given his keys to the room 307, he stopped by the mail desk to see if any letters had arrived for him. Indeed, there was a letter, the mail person told him, and he handed him an envelope addressed to Mr. George D. Bryson, room 307. This wouldn't be so odd, except the letter was not for him, but for room 307's previous occupant, another man named George D. Bryson. Okay, the story of identical twins, nearly identical lives, are often astonishing, but perhaps none more so than those of the identical twins born in Ohio. The twins were separated at birth, both adopted by different families. Unknown to each other, both families named the boy James, and here the coincidences had just begun. Both of the Jameses grew up not knowing of the other, yet both sought law enforcement training, both had abilities in mechanical drawing and carpentry, and each had married a woman named Linda. They both had sons, whom one named James Allen and the other named James Allen. The twin brothers also divorced their wives and married other women, both named Betty. And they both owned dogs, which they named Toy. Ugh. 40 years after their childhood separation, the two men were reunited to share their amazingly similar lives. Weird. Henry Ziegland thought he had dodged fate. In 1883, he broke off a relationship with his girlfriend, who, out of distress, committed suicide. The girl's brother was so enraged that he hunted down Ziegland and shot him. The brother, believing he had killed Ziegland, then turned the gun on himself and took his own life. But Ziegland had not been killed. The bullet, in fact, had only grazed his face and lodged into a tree. Ziegland surely thought himself a lucky man. And some years later, however, Ziegland decided to cut down the large tree, which still had the bullet in it. The task seemed so formidable that he decided to blow it up with a few sticks of dynamite. The explosion propelled that bullet into Zieglin's head, killing him. Fuck. That's from Ripley's Believe It or Not. What the fuck? Who takes down a tree with fucking dynamite? Dipshit.
I'm rich, successful, and throwing it all away on multiple women. I'm drowning in pussy. It's terrible!
Sounds like a serious case of sex addiction. Buy my book, 13 Steps to Heaven, today.
13 Steps to Heaven. Available in the discount bin at bookstores everywhere.
While American novelist Anne Parrish was browsing a bookstore in Paris in the 1920s, she came upon a book that was one of her childhood favorites, Jack Frost and Other Stories. She picked up the old book and showed it to her husband, telling him of the book she fondly remembered as a child. Her husband took the book, opened it, and on the flyleaf found the inscription, Anne Parrish, 209 North Weber Street, Colorado Springs. It was her first edition book. I've heard that story before. That's fucking unbelievable to me. John and Arthur Malforth were twins who lived about 80 miles apart in Great Britain. On the evening of May 22nd, 75, they both fell severely ill from chest pains. The families of both men were completely unaware of the other's illness. Both of the men were rushed to separate hospitals at approximately the same time, and both died of heart attacks shortly after the arrival. Wow. Well, that's something, isn't it? Man. Fucking shit. That just goes to speak for genetics, huh? My God.
Coming for the Exorbio 720 gaming system. Play the game GameTastic.com called Not As Bad As It Seems, and the Liberty Tree called Derivative and Boring, but in a fun way. Pride, not prejudice. Presenting the first-person shooter like no other, apart from all the ways it copies lots of other games, with a riveting, cliche-ridden storyline by a moron of a writer who's never been anywhere near the South, and levels designed by ripping off every shooter. You'll fight for Southern justice in the Southern Middle East while climbing a Southern frozen waterfall on a Southern ship that's about to sink, all while eating ribs and watching college football. In the final boss level, you fight a tornado with your bare hands.
Damn you, God! You ain't gonna kill me!
Pride, not prejudice. The shooter we've all been waiting for. Only for the Exorbio 720 gaming system.
Wow. All right, guys, on that note, that is going to hold us over until the next one comes out. And I do mean podcast episodes, not Southern video games. But before I sign off, let me... Wow, I just looked at my stats for the first time in a week. Thank you guys very much for being so supportive. God damn. All right. Let me see here. On the last episode, the most influential city, which I've never seen at the top of the list. I want to say thank you to Brockton, Massachusetts, followed by Orlando, Florida, Salt Lake City, Utah, Charlotte, North Carolina, Jackson, Mississippi, Dallas, Texas, Los Angeles, California, Chicago, Illinois, Houston, Texas, Anaheim, California, Woburn, Massachusetts, Brooklyn, New York, Denver, Colorado, Portland, Oregon, Indianapolis, Indiana, and the Bronx, New York. Thank you guys very much for spreading the word and tuning back in, because I greatly appreciate your love and support. If you'd like to reach me, I can be reached at springheeledjack@anthologyofhorror.com. That is springheeledjack@anthologyofhorror.com. Please feel free to send me your own scary stories, questions, answers, hate mail, whatever else you want to. I really enjoy the emails from you guys, and I promise it may take a while, but I will get back to you as soon as I possibly can. Please don't send me anything that you wouldn't want sent to yourself. You know what I'm saying. Wow. Also, if you guys go to anthologyofhorror.com, you will find links to the most recent episode. You will find a media player with the most recent episode in it. You'll also find a link to my Patreon in the top right corner. If you're so inclined, it would be greatly appreciated if you could make a donation to Patreon. I've crunched some numbers, and based on the most recent stats, if everybody that listens to me consistently donated $1 a month, I could afford rent in California. kind of just kidding. But I could probably focus on doing the show quite a bit more. So if that's something that interests you, please tell all your closest friends that with your help, the show could be monetized without using advertisements. You don't have to. You're under no obligation. I'm going to continue to do the show either way, but you could hear it more in the event that I had to work less. That's all I'm saying. But I want to thank each and every one of you for tuning in. Thank you so much for being one of the better fan bases out there right now for podcasting. I truly believe that you guys are one of the most supportive networks, and I want to thank you for it. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. So until next time, you guys, stay spooky.
You're in Vinewood, the capital of the world. You want to make it big, but you have seconds to make an impression. A retouched impression that lies about your age, weight, and height. You're in a town of liars and fantasists. Isn't it time your headshot showed you fit right in? In this town, it's vital to walk around with black and white 8x10s of yourself, looking like a catalog model or a softcore porn star. That's where I come in. My name is Lorenzo O'Houlihan. First, I take an old-fashioned photograph of you, and then I touch it up to get rid of your skin tags and the wrinkles from years of worry that you're useless and so is the personality you were born with. I help turn you into something Vinewood knows how to work with, a bland automaton with the personality of a dishcloth. I also offer casting couch training, so you'll know when and how to put out to get ahead. I also teach gaydar blocking, so the gay mafia will think you're one of them. I am Lorenzo O'Houlihan, Dream Maker. Contact me today.